Hey, what's up, everyone? You are on the Eden Podcast, and we are so glad that you're here. I hope that the next 30 minutes will help you to become the person that God always dreamed you could be. Let's get started. Hey, what's up, everybody? It is so, so good to see you today. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. If you've been with us for a while, you know that we have so much love for you. But if you're new with us, we are so, so grateful that you decided to jump in on the conversation today. My name is Daniel. I'm the lead pastor here at Eden Church, and we're all about helping people take a next step with Jesus. And my prayer for all of us over the next 30 minutes or so is that at some point we would begin to have a little bit more clarity about God's purpose for our life. And I'm not talking about purpose with a lowercase p, but purpose with a capital P, understanding God's vision for our life and the reason we're here. I'm pumped also because we are continuing in a series that we started a few weeks ago. Actually, we're wrapping up this series that we called Heaven, Earth, A Future Worth Fighting For. And this entire series was really meant to help give us clarity about why we do what we do here at Eden Church. And so we started off the conversation looking at Jesus's vision for the future, where he was teaching his disciples how to pray. And he said, pray that God's will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And he gave us vision for this reality, this future reality, where God's presence, God's kingdom, and God's creation would someday be united as one. Those things would exist in harmony with one another. And that was an amazing vision for the future. I think it gives us hope when we're struggling or when things around us seem bleak and discouraging. But the question we started asking was, well, how do we experience heaven now? Like, what is the role of the church in between the prayer and the promise, between the promise that we had in the beginning with the Garden of Eden and the hope that we have for the future? And so over the last few weeks, we've been answering this question, what does that look like for the church? And more specifically, what does that look like for Eden Church in 2021? And I realized that it's kind of weird for us to be talking about, like, how does this church bring heaven here on earth, especially at a time like the one that we're dealing with. If you're watching this, then you are well aware that not too long ago, we went back into a more stricter phase of shelter in place. And I know that there are, like, so many of us that are tired and feeling saddened and worn out by some of these restrictions. And there are so many of us that wish we could just go back to the way things were. We wish that someone would fix all of this and that someday in the near future, I mean, we would just be experiencing life as we had before. But I think that what maybe you're realizing, just like I'm realizing, is that chances are we're not going back anytime soon. Our world will probably not be the same. And what I hope that you see is that this reality, while it's hard, is also an amazing opportunity. Because one of the things that we are learning in all of this is that God will not waste a crisis. A few months ago, I read a book about the history of the last great American revival in the U.S. And a revival is just this widespread reawakening to people's spirituality. And it typically takes place in, like, a specific geographic location. But it's interesting, when you look at history, it is usually in times or in areas of spiritual darkness where the light of the church has shined the brightest. And 1969 was a time like that for us here in the United States. There was spiritual and cultural darkness. There was a rejection of the governing systems of that time. There was a disillusionment with the American dream. There was racial tension. There was warring political ideologies. And we were a country literally at war abroad and at home. But out of this movement, in this moment in time, there was this cultural movement emerged known as the hippie movement. And everything that sort of drove the philosophical foundation of the hippie movement was in stark contrast to everything that organized religion stood for. And it was interesting that these people were literally not welcomed in the church, and the church wasn't welcomed in their communes. And it was really kind of a sad thing to see that there were so many people that were hurting, drug addicted, homeless, and the church was unwilling to change its methods to serve this community. And what happened, and what happens oftentimes when you're so committed to a system or a way of doing things, after a while, it begins to become really difficult for you to see or to think outside the system that you've been operating within. But there were these two seminary students, Kent Philpott and David Hoyt, who lived in San Francisco, who saw the disconnect between the church and this emerging culture. And instead of rejecting this movement, they embraced the moment. And I love that about these two spiritual entrepreneurs, because what they started doing is they literally started creating these Christian communes and coffee houses all over the Bay Area that served this community in its a very specific way. And what happened from like this little vision to reach and serve their culture, it sparked a spiritual awakening in our country where eventually hundreds of thousands of young people all over the United States came to faith in Jesus, and it completely changed our culture. I love that these two students had the courage to see the cultural moment that they were living in, and they leveraged it to provide hope for people, and it changed a generation forever. I know that sometimes we can look out into the world and we can feel discouraged because so much of what's happening in our world today feels so wrong. There's a lot to stand against, but my hope is that we would begin to see this cultural moment as an opportunity to leverage it for hope in our generation. Because what they knew and what we are beginning to learn is that God will never waste a crisis. And so we're going to look in the Old Testament today in the book of Esther, and it is the true story of a Jewish lady who leveraged a moment in her time to provide hope for an entire culture of people. Esther eventually rose to power as a foreigner living in the city of Susa, which was the capital city of Persia. And this was all taking place about 100 years after the people of Israel were exiled and conquered by the Babylonians out of Israel. And eventually she became queen of Persia, but she did it kind of undercover. Like nobody knew that she was a Jew except for a few of her family members that had watched her move up in the ranks in this culture. And to be honest, Esther was living a really, really good life. She was eating fancy foods. She was living with the best accommodation. She was rubbing shoulders with some of the social elites of the day. She was literally an influencer. And she was probably the type of person where shelter in place did not apply to her. And things were great for her as she was living in this culture and finding success and becoming an influencer, until one day she found out that her uncle Mordecai refused to bow down to a narcissistic government official named Haman. And instead of taking personal revenge on Mordecai, Haman took revenge on his entire people. Beginning in Esther chapter 3, verse 8, we'll begin reading. It says, "Then Haman approached King Xerxes and said, 'There's a certain race of people scattered through all the provinces of your empire who keep themselves separate from everyone else. Their laws are different from those of any other people, and they refuse to obey the laws of the king. So it is not in the king's interest to let them live. If it pleases the king, issue a decree that they be destroyed.' And the king agreed. Dispatches were sent by swift messengers into all the provinces of the empire, giving the order that all Jews, young and old, including women and children, must be killed, slaughtered, and annihilated on a single day. When Mordecai learned about all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on burlap and ashes, and went outside into the city, crying with a loud and bitter wail. So Hatak went out to Mordecai in the square in front of the palace gate. Mordecai told him the whole story, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai gave Hatak a copy of the decree issued in Susa that called for the death of all Jews. He asked Hatak to show it to Esther and explain the situation to her. He also asked Hatak to direct her to go to the king to beg for mercy and plead for her people. So Hatak returned to Esther with Mordecai's message. Then Esther told Hatak to go back and relay this message to Mordecai. All the king's officials and even the peoples in the provinces know that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die unless the king holds out his gold scepter. And the king has not called for me to come to him for 30 days. So Hatak gave Esther's message to Mordecai. It's interesting for us to really even imagine the intensity of this moment. Because up till this point, the Jews had a relatively cordial relationship with the Persian government. They were allowed to worship. They were allowed to practice their cultural ceremonies. And for Esther, there was literally no way that she ever thought that she would be leading a crisis like this. But now she was facing this moment in her life and in the life of her people that required a great deal of courage. And you can see that there's even this level of timidity in her response to Mordecai, because Mordecai is saying and sees this situation very clearly, you've got to do something to intercede on the behalf of your people. And Esther's hesitancy is that she knows the customs of the land, and she wants Mordecai to understand and realize that if she even approaches the king without being invited into his courts, it could cost her everything, including her life. I wonder if someone has ever told you to do something that you know you should do, but you don't want to. That's basically where Esther is in this moment. And I personally hate those moments in my life because I know that I should do something, but I'm not sure what I should do. And so what happens for me is I spend a lot of time asking myself questions, hoping that I'll arrive at some angle that will give me clarity about how to move forward. And there's no doubt that Esther, in this moment, is asking herself those questions. What should I do? How do I respond to the government? How do I lead my people? Where do my loyalty lie? Is there anyone else who can approach the king instead of me? And I imagine that there are so many of us right now asking similar questions. What am I supposed to do in light of all that is happening in the world? How do I make sense of it? How do I lead my organization? What is my role in all of this? Who do I trust? And I think what we're all learning is that it is hard to know how to lead in unprecedented circumstances. And the reason is because there is no playbook for how to operate right now. There's no playbook for how to be married in a pandemic, or how to raise kids, or how to educate your children, or how to lead an organization, or how to serve your community, or how to maintain faith. And this is the moment that Esther is facing. There is no playbook. There's no precedent for her to look to for guidance. And so you can hear the timidity and the uncertainty in her voice as she responds back to Mordecai. But then she hears from her uncle in Esther chapter 6, verse 13. Mordecai sent this reply to Esther. Don't think that for a moment, because you're in the palace, you will escape when all other Jews are killed. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for such a time as this? Basically, her uncle gives her three things to consider. First, he says, just because you're in the palace, don't think that this isn't going to affect you. Someday, this problem that you're trying to avoid will show up at your front door for you and for your family. You will be found out. It's kind of interesting sometimes how we think that if we don't address a problem in our life, it'll just go away with time. But what you've probably realized is that time doesn't heal all wounds. In fact, what it allows for it to do is it allows for a small problem to become a big problem. And when we think that we have dealt with something, but we haven't, it typically comes back with a vengeance. And this is what Mordecai was warning Esther about. She thinks that if she doesn't address it right now, then it's not going to be her problem. But he promises her that someday it will come back to haunt her. The second thing that he tells her to consider, he says, know that there will be deliverance for Jews whether you do something or not. You don't have to do anything, but this is maybe your opportunity to. I feel like I learned this lesson a long time ago, that God will do what he's going to do with or without me. He doesn't need me to reach this city. He doesn't need me to be a pastor of this church. He doesn't need my resources. He doesn't need me to do anything. But he's inviting me into an opportunity. He's inviting me to be a part of what he is doing in our world. And the third thing that Mordecai reminds Esther of is he says, what if this was the moment that God has positioned you for? Like, who knows if all this has happened in your life for this one moment? What if all this has worked out today so that you could protect your people? I know that there are probably very few people right now celebrating all that we have gone through in this year. It has been hard. It has been scary. It has been frustrating and lonely and isolating. And at times for many people, it has been depressing and even crushing to our spirit. But I think that what God may be saying to each of us is, what if you have been placed where you are for such a time as this? Like, what if you are at your job right now because God wants to use you to influence someone's life? Or what if you are in the relationships that you're in today, or in the house and the neighborhood you're in, or the city that you're in? What if God has you exactly where you are supposed to be, with the people that you're around and the friends that you have, for a moment just like this? Because he wants to use you in their life to be an encouragement, to be a support to them, to be with them, to be a neighbor to them, to love them the way that Jesus loves them. What if you have been positioned for this right now? I feel like we've been asking that question of ourselves as a church. What if God has us here right now for this very moment? And he's been building this church over the last 3.5 years and bringing certain people to influence the direction and the decision of this church so that we could serve our city. And he is positioning this community to have an impact in our area like we have never seen before. And when I begin to think of it from that perspective, the pain of this year doesn't go away, but I can start to see how God can use all of this so that he would position our church to love this community. Because what I'm becoming more and more convinced of as I look around the world and I look in our culture and the conversations that we're having is that people's hearts are becoming open to this message of hope, perhaps in a way that they have never been open before. And I'm seeing that God will not waste a crisis. And so this is one of the reasons that over the last few weeks, we have been reminding you and casting vision of our For the Future campaign, because we see an opportunity on the horizon and we want to go deeper and wider and serve our city in a greater capacity than we have ever done before. And I know that for some of us last week, when we talked about raising $100,000 in the month of December, it seemed like it was crazy. And I promise you, this always seems crazy on the front end until we see God deliver on what he has been leading us to do. We also feel like we have so many opportunities right here all around us, and we want you to be a part of it. And so literally in a few hours at True Hope Community Church, we have a team of people ready to distribute 500 joy boxes, and we are challenging you to take that step of faith, not just being a part of Eden, but being a part of your community and serving and loving and being an encouragement to the people who are in your life. And we want you to literally come here and pick up a few boxes and give them to your friends or a neighbor. And I promise you, what will happen is that you will be blessed because you have leveraged this moment to impact someone else's life. And it is why in this next season of ministry, as a church, we're going to keep moving forward in faith. We're going to keep inviting you into the journey. We're going to keep challenging you beyond what you feel comfortable to do. Because we know that if we as a community together can leverage this moment, our city and our neighborhoods will never be the same. And we are learning to have faith because we believe that God won't waste this crisis. But what I know, like you know, is that it is easier for us to take a step back than it is for us to take a step forward in faith. But what I also know is that I'm not trying to get to the end of my life having lived a safe, comfortable, self-centered, risk-free life. And I love how Mordecai challenged Esther to go beyond what she was comfortable doing. I loved how Mordecai challenged Esther to take a risk. And I love how he framed the risk. He challenges her to do something beyond what she feels comfortable doing. He challenges her to take a risk on behalf of other people because there was no one else that could do what she was going to do. And I love how Mordecai positioned this problem. He says, Esther, you've got to do something now, and this is what you need to know. That you will either do nothing now and die later, or you can take the chance of dying now, but using your voice to make an impact that no one else can. And what we want to keep challenging you to do, keep challenging you to sort of embrace this perspective, is that there are people in your life that no one else can reach except for you. That there are some people that we will never have influence over the way that you do. And this may be your opportunity in their life, if you were willing. And what we believe, and I hope that you're beginning to believe too, is that God will not waste this crisis. Look at what it says in Esther chapter 8, verse 3 and 4. Then Esther went again before the king, falling down at his feet and begging him with tears to stop the evil plot devised by Haman the Agagite against the Jews. Again, the king held out the gold scepter to Esther. So she rose and stood before him. Haman was this evil, manipulative leader that was trying to hide the truth from the king of who Esther was. But in response to the request, the king sent an updated decree all over the kingdom that protected the Jews from the attack. Beginning in chapter 8, verse 6, it says, the Jews were filled with joy and gladness and were honored everywhere. In every province and city, wherever the king's decree arrived, the Jews rejoiced and had a great celebration and declared a public festival and holiday. Her courage in this moment saved an entire generation of people. And I believe that our courage in this unique season of life will impact our city and our world for generations to come. So much of what we saw happening in 1968 was true of what is happening in our culture today. There was political unrest. There was racial tension. There was distrust. There was political frustration. And there was an overall sense of hopelessness in our culture. And so many of those characteristics, I think, define the moment that we are in right now. And what I love about that moment is we see that God did not waste their crisis. He used two students who leveraged this moment before them. They had the vision and the courage to act. And I believe that we have the same opportunity right now. And this week, I want to ask you, and encourage you to pray about seeing this moment differently. I know that it's been hard. I know that there have been challenges. I know that you have been stressed and worried and fearful and even depressed. But what if we could begin seeing this moment differently? What if we became convinced that God has you where you are right now for such a time as this? And when we look back at our lives and the way that we responded to this moment, ask ourselves, how do we want to remember it? Do we want to remember ourselves sort of shrieking back in fear, afraid of what the future holds? Or having the boldness and the courage to look at the way that God has worked in so many other generations and deciding that we are just going to lean in. We don't have any confidence or knowledge about what the future is going to hold. We're just going to trust that God is going to do something with our faith. I know there are some of you that are here today that have come at just the right time. Like you are in this conversation. Because you're supposed to be. Like we always say, no one ever shows up to church on accident. But you may be asking yourself this question, like, what am I supposed to do? Church has not been part of what I do. Faith has not been a part of my rhythm. I think for you, your next step is to begin that relationship with God. To take that step of faith. a willingness to say, I'm going to trust God, surrender my heart to God and trust Him with my future, believing that He loved you enough to send His Son as a sacrifice for your life. I think all of us have been asking big questions in this season. Where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going? And if that's you today, I want to encourage you to begin a relationship with God by trusting Him, by creating more space in your heart for what God might have for you. And if that's you today, I want to encourage you to close your eyes and to bow your head and to pray this prayer after me in your heart. And there's nothing special about the words of this prayer. It's just whether or not these words reflect the condition of your heart, your desire to experiencing something more than what you've experienced before. So go ahead and pray with me. Dear God, I want to thank you for loving me. I want to thank you for sending your Son to sacrifice His life on my behalf. Today, I realize that the way I do life leaves me tired, stressed, worried, overwhelmed, and I know there's something more. Today, I want to trust that what I am missing is you, and I want to place my faith in the promise that you have a purpose and a plan for my life. God, will you give me the strength and the courage to follow you in the days to come? In Jesus' name, I believe.